Eddie.
We were wrecking his day by taking him to the barracks. We'd stopped him, at least temporarily, from beating up his girlfriend. He had to sit in the back seat with the springs digging into his ass and his fancy boots planted on our special puke-resistant plastic floor mats. But Brian was making us pay. Me in particular. But of course, George had to listen to him, too. He'd chant his version of my name and then stomp down rhythmically with the big old stacked heels of his shit-kickers just as hard as he could. The overall effect was something like a football cheer. And all the time, he was staring through the mesh at me with his head down and his little stoned eyes gleaming. I could see him in the mirror clipped to the sun visor. "Jack, you boys! Clump, clump, clump! Jack, you boys! Clump, clump, clump!" "Want to quit that, Brian?" George asked. We were nearing the barracks, the pretty nearly empty barracks. By then, we knew what was going on out in Poteenville. Shirley had given us some of it, and the rest we'd picked up from the chatter of the converging units. "You're giving me an earache." It was all the encouragement Brian needed. "Jack, you boys! Clump, clump, clump!" If he stomped much harder, he was apt to put his feet right through the floorboards, but George didn't bother asking him to stop again. When they're buttoned up in the back of your cruiser, getting under your skin is just about all they can try. I'd experienced it before, but hearing this dumbbell, who once knocked the books out of my arms in the high school calf and tore the loops off the backs of my shirts in study hall, chanting that old hateful version of my name, man, that was spooky. Like a trip in Professor Peabody's Wayback Machine. I didn't say anything, but I'm pretty sure George knew. And when he picked up the mic and called in, 20 bass and a tick, was what he said, I knew he was talking to me more than Shirley. We'd chain Brian to the chair in the bad boy corner, turn on the TV for him if he wanted it, and take a preliminary pass at the paperwork. Then we'd head for Poteenville, unless the situation out there changed suddenly for the better. Shirley could call Statler County Jail and tell them we had one of their favorite troublemakers coming their way. In the meantime, however, "Jack, you boys! Clump, clump, clump! Jack, you boys!" Now screaming so loud his cheeks were red and the cords stood out on the sides of his neck. He wasn't just playing me anymore. Brian had moved on to an authentic shit fit. What a pleasure getting rid of him was going to be. We went up Bookins Hill, George driving a little faster than was strictly necessary, headed for Troop D at the top. George signaled and turned in, perhaps still moving a little faster than he strictly should have been. Lippy, understanding that his time to annoy us had grown short, began shaking the mesh between us and him, as well as thumping down with those John Wayne boots of his. "Jack, you boys! Clump, clump, clump! Shake, shake, shake!" Up the driveway we went, toward the parking lot at the back. George turned tight to the left around the corner of the building, meaning to park with the rear half of Unit 6 by the back steps of the barracks, so we could take good old Bri right up and right in with no fuss, muss, or bother. And as George came around the corner, there was Mr. Dillon, right in front of us.
"Watch out! Watch out!"
George shouted. Whether to me or to the dog or possibly to himself, I have no way of knowing. And remembering all this, it strikes me how much it was like the day he hit the woman in Lassburg. So close it was almost a dress rehearsal, but with one very large difference. I wonder if in the last few weeks before he sucked the barrel of his gun, he didn't find himself thinking, "I missed the dog and hit the woman," over and over again. Maybe not. But I know I would have, if it had been me. Missed the dog and hit the woman. How can you believe in a god when it's that way around instead of the other?